subtle skills, big results.
Welcome to the Ninja Selling Podcast. Welcome back, ninjas around the world. Garrett and Matt are here again, and I brought a topic today, and hopefully Matt jumps in on this, and he will throw all of his two cents into it. I am watching the need for qualifying buyers in the marketplace right now. It is on an intense level of agents, people needing to slow down and qualify these buyers, because if you don't have good qualified buyers in today's marketplace right now, you will lead yourself to extinction. You will find yourself hating 2021 and where this year is going, because guess what? They're not qualified. They can't perform. So Matt, welcome.
Good morning, Garrett. Hello, everybody. Oh man, this is such a big, big deal right now. I know we've talked about the buyer process before, and I'm sure this is not going to be the last time, but I'm seeing so many agents kick off the year with a hot list that has lots of quote unquote buyers on it. And a lot of agents who are tired of showing home after home or missing out on offer after offer, and they're getting frustrated. And it all comes back to the process: qualifying buyers, utilizing a process, keeping people focused, and being the commander of this process as well. You're in charge here. So I'm excited about this one, Garrett.
Well, if we look back at the 10-step buyer's process and what the need of it is, I mean, there's a couple pieces to it. One is it helps you understand if you're working with a real buyer. You know, that's a piece, an element of what this is. It's allowing you to sit there and say, okay, do I have somebody that has the ability of performing in this marketplace? The other piece of it is it actually turns people into buyers. Like, don't get fooled that you have a buyer. You have a person that you're out working with. And yes, we're looking at homes. And yes, we're writing offers. But if you can't do what it takes to be a buyer at the end of the day, you don't technically have a buyer. And I joked about it before we got on the podcast, but you know, sometimes realtors should like doing realtor things. Like, it feels good because you get to go home and tell your friends, I was out showing property today. But at the end of the day, like, I would like it if you guys get paid.
Yeah. And not only that, we want to help these people get into a home too. I mean, if they really want to, and because there's a difference between somebody wanting to buy a house and being a real serious buyer. Those are two different types of buyers right there. One is there's a desire, I want this, but they're not engaged in a process. There's not clarity. There's not a comfort level. And then there's somebody who's serious about it. They understand where they're at. They've gone through the buyer interview with you. They understand the funnel process, how properties come to market, how we find the ones that they're looking for, what criteria, and how prepared they are.
So let me go back then for a second, because there are people out there that could be real buyers. They just haven't been set up successfully to be real buyers. And that this process will allow them to be able to do that. And that's why it exists. This is why it's here. But Matt, you made a great comment. You're having people right now, I'm seeing it also, that we're coaching and they're saying, we need to go back to the buyer's process. We need to go back and start doing the 10-step buyer's process again. And Matt, you said it wonderfully. How did you say it earlier?
I said, well, where did it go? Like, did you leave it behind somewhere? I mean, this isn't like, oh, I forgot my phone at the house. I need to go back and grab it. Like this is like, why is this not always with you? This isn't something that you do for a period of time and then you're like, well, this is my best friend. I don't need to do that. It's like, yes, you do. Because don't you want them to have clarity? Don't you want to provide the best customer experience that you possibly can? I mean, particularly with your great people in your database. That's why this process, like, we don't skip steps here.
No, you don't want to skip steps. And that's, you know, we find that when things get moving fast, and right now we're in a fast market. All the people that I talked to this last week, you know, when we talk about inventory levels in their marketplace, I mean, they're going again to very, very low inventory levels. They're like, we used to have 40 homes to pick from. Right now we have 3. As I said earlier, we used to have months of inventory. Now we have weeks of inventory. And when that happens, Matt, you can totally, I'm hoping, agree to this, is that's when we watch people start skipping steps. That's when we watch people just saying, we've got to go get in the car right now. We got to get out the door. We got to start looking at homes, because if I don't do it, I'm doing them a disservice because they might be missing the home that they really want.
Yeah. A lot of people say that. And I totally understand where you're coming from because I hear that all the time in different scenarios as well outside of real estate. But here's the thing, Garrett. The buyer process doesn't take very long. The buyer interview is not a long process. And it doesn't mean that you can't even go through it quickly if you have a really great relationship with somebody. But going through that to help provide clarity, even if somebody's bought a home before with you, and even if they've bought a home with you recently, I'm hearing a lot of people turning over homes. They've been in for 2 or 3 years. I mean, that's, which is awesome. Life changes happen. People got to buy another home. They're like, wait, let's just go out and look. And there's confusion. Going back to this buyer process, particularly getting your feet grounded on understanding where they're at before they start. This is why there's foundational questions in the first part of the buyer interview. And then going through your buyer packet. These are, we did a podcast on step 10, which is my favorite step, but these two parts, asking your foundational questions and going through your buyer packet and making sure they're comfortable with contracts and things like that, that eliminates any confusion when it comes time to write an offer. And I see almost everybody skipping those things. We need to get those questions answered and get that clarity done up front so that when we are in a multiple offer situation, we can move real fast.
So let's talk about the 10-step buyer's process kind of in order. I don't want to teach it. I mean, we could sit here and teach it, and that's not really what needs to be done. But you need to understand, for all of you out there that have the 10-step buyer's process, why? Like, what is the importance of this thing? What does this do in kind of the stages that exist? And one of the first things, Matt, that I watch with it is that we talk about the first steps of it, which is just about connecting and controlling the conversation, is that it allows you to establish who's in control of the process. And, you know, we talk about a ninja. We control the process. They control the decisions. Well, when you're moving really fast and you're skipping steps, right up front, what I'm watching is a lot of real estate agents out there that are letting up control of the process, which is the problem is that if I look at agents that come to me saying like, oh my gosh, these people are wearing me out, or oh my gosh, I can't get them to make decisions or they won't move forward. 9 times out of 10, it's because we have established in a relationship where there is no process. They've got the reins. They're the ones sitting on top of the stagecoach, you know, driving where these horses are going to go. And we're along for the ride. And low inventory in the marketplace we're in right now, you don't want to be that person. You will not like this at the end of the day. Matt, you're seeing people that are worn out, fatigued and tired and, you know, not being able to get to the finish line. Usually it's because when they skip the 10-step buyer's process, they've let control of the process right up front, right from the beginning. And it's really tough to get back once you let it go.
Yeah. It's very hard because you've now trained these folks that this is how it works. You guys find a house online, you send me a text, and we go see it. There's no control with that whatsoever. If your clients are contacting you constantly to set up showings, to do these things, you're not in control of the process. You're just not. And I think even just having a meeting, 15 minutes, and I'm seeing some people actually start to do a pre-buyer interview, which, because since we're not having a lot of the in-person meetings, they're getting on Zoom and they're getting these connection steps and this rapport building done on Zoom and doing these foundational questions on Zoom. And then, which leads to, oh, and here's the buyer packet and kind of getting that into their hands. And then when they meet again, starting to go through into some more detail and then getting out there and looking at homes, which I kind of like. I mean, I think that can work as well, but that's the beginning of it, right? You got to get those first few steps in.
But my feeling is like the 10-step buyer's process can be done 100% virtually. If you're going to bother to do the little pre-meeting, do the whole darn thing. Like, let's make it happen.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is where and let me clarify, where this pre-meeting happens is not like a scheduled thing. This is when somebody, you know, calls up and is like, hey, Garrett, I'm thinking about buying a house. And it's like, great. You know, well, hey, do you have a few minutes? If they have a lot of time, it's like, let's dive in. But initially it's like, hey, let me just get some basics here and let's set up a meeting, because typically that's only one party and we need all the decision makers, whether it's 1, 2, 3, however many, in on that buyer interview process as well, so that we do have total clarity.
I appreciate you clarifying that, because again, I think that again, there are some steps to get yourself into this. But I think again, when people start to think about the 10-step buyer's process, they look at this as like, it's like this big hurdle, this roadblock into getting to helping these people find a house. And really it's like stopping and putting the best fuel in the car you can possibly have before you take a road trip. It's stopping and, you know, making sure you've got this vehicle that's going to get you there. It's this wonderful opportunity to just pump the brakes for a second and say, do we have everything we need so this is going to be a successful journey?
Mm-hmm.
So I want to kind of continue just kind of on a big picture about like, what is the next gift of the 10-step buyer's process? Because for me, it goes into finding out what this buyer that we're working with is, what their previous experiences have been with homeownership and what their experiences have been with going through and buying a house before, if they bought a house before. Because I guarantee you, it's different than where we're at right now.
Even if they've done it with you, right? Because maybe some things have changed with your process, and maybe they saw maybe some things changed in their life that give them a different perspective on the process. So I think that's a really important part, Garrett, is understanding, hey, how familiar are you guys with how things operate today? You know, going back to when we bought your last home, or to when you bought your last home, if they didn't buy it with you, what worked for you? You know, what did you like about that process, and what didn't you like? You know, thinking about that right now, and get right out of their mouth what they're looking for in the process. Cause we're always focused on the results, which we're going to get to. That's why there's the funnel process and all, and the pieces of paper. But if we're only focused on the results, then we're missing a few key criteria that create clarity, correct?
Oh my gosh. Yes. And we need to figure out what this big picture is that's going on with these people. Yeah, I look at when I bought this house. You know, I think we were like 7 years ago, maybe 8 years ago. So we'll say seven just for be safe. But I remember this house had been on the market for like 6 months or so. Like, it had been here for a while. Like, it was coming to the end of its, like, I know it was coming to the end of its listing term. It was going to go away. If I was to be a buyer today and I go back and think about, okay, what was it like when I bought this house? There was inventory. Things were on sale. It was a very, very different marketplace. And again, if you think that this marketplace was what it was like when last time you bought a house, you are just going to get lost in the minutiae of what's going on.
Yes. You know, Garrett, part of this process too, and not to divert from kind of going through this, but we got buyer fears too that we need to identify. You know, and there's four greatest fears that buyer has, which is losing the house that they want, missing out on something else. Like, hey, we've only seen one house. What if something else comes on the market? Paying too much and there's something wrong with it, which could be the situation that you were in, right? Like, this house has been on the market for a while. Why is it not selling? What's wrong with
it? There was something wrong with it. Just so you know.
But you found out, right?
Oh, we knew there was something wrong with it. That's the reason it was sitting. So it was one of those, like, if you're willing to take on this project, there's a house available on sale. But that was it. Again, yes, you're on the right track. Sorry for interrupting.
No. But that's exactly what goes on. And I've never seen the fear of paying too much being elevated to where it is right now, because prices are high. They're moving real fast. You look at the FHFA chart of the house price index nationwide, and you know that ramp leading up to the crash in 2008 was pretty steep. Well, the last few quarters, it almost looks like a vertical line, which is what's happening. And people are fearful of that.
Well, you say that, you know, the paying too much, but it's also, is there something wrong with it? When you're moving that fast and you're having to make decisions that quickly, and a lot of people are having, in a lot of markets, are having to waive their inspections. They're having to either take a pre-home inspection at face value and say, gosh, we're going to trust that one because that's what they're offering and that's what we're going to have to do to be able to buy it. Or sometimes there's nothing available and they're just going like, we're just going to waive our inspection. Is that smart? Well, it's going to be what you're going to have to do to buy the house. Smart or not, like, do you want to buy the house? Like, that type of stuff, all of a sudden you get a buyer that's under contract and you wonder why so many deals have bailed out of, you know, people have found a way to get the deal to fall apart. You know, all of a sudden you're sitting there and they've got their two greatest fears slapping them in the face. Did we pay too much for this house? Yeah, you probably did, because we're pushing things right now. Be prepared to be an owner for a little bit. And the second thing is like, oh my gosh, was it smart to waive a contingency here of the home inspection? Maybe there's something wrong with the house. Yeah, there very well could be. You could find out down the road that, yeah, there are some issues with this home. It's very interesting because, again, these fears are like, usually you have a marketplace that will allow you to navigate them a little bit better. the 10-step buyer's process will allow you to navigate them up front and have the conversation and the understanding. So you're not trying to figure it out during the contract.
Yeah. Especially conversations like that, Garrett. I mean, going into like, hey, Garrett, this is the house that we want. All right, guys, here's the situation. 60 offers. Oh. Which, by the way, that's a real thing right now. I actually heard about a house in LA that had 92 offers on it. 92. Like,
is that a lot today, or it's becoming the new normal? Oh man, yeah, only 92? Huh.
And I know someone else out there is listening and going, my listing's been on the market for 3 months. What's wrong with it?
Yeah. So let's clarify that. You said somewhere you heard about that in Los Angeles. I am very regularly hearing that people are having anywhere between 5 to 15 offers. That is definitely a kind of a range that I'm watching out there. And yeah, every once in a while, there's a house that's sitting there, a diamond in the rough, that is not necessarily getting offers.
And I think this is where we need to be careful in the buyer process as to what we are projecting to the buyers, because we want to give them information, but we don't want to make their decisions for them with what to do with that information. So I think in this buyer process, while we're sitting there going through all this stuff, during that conversation, we need to talk about what's happening in the market. We need to talk about what's happening when people are making offers. You're going to see some situations where there's a lot of offers. You're going to see some situations where maybe there isn't. You're going to see some situations where people are talking about the potential of multiple offers, and maybe there doesn't, that doesn't come to fruition. And this is also where I see agents starting to blame each other and get into this, we're being misled stuff. And it's like, this is why we got to have conversations up front so that you're clear too on what we're getting into, so that you can give information to your buyers and navigate it together, because you're not going to have full transparency with everybody. You're just not. And that's a tough situation to be in. But Garrett, what are some things, and I know that we kind of diverted from going through this buyer process, which, by the way, if anybody really wants to dive into this, Ninja Selling in the book, page 226, assuming that's still the page number. The versions that are being sold.
It was printed a little bit differently there. So hopefully.
Yeah, in the back, it's in the appendix. The whole thing is there. So go read it. It's got everything there. But Garrett, what are the things that we need to be talking to our buyers about right now with all of these situations that we're in? How can we make sure that we have this conversation without this feeling? Because agents are getting into this fear of missing out spot. How do we have this conversation without engaging the FOMO that's happening?
I think if you listen to your client and we put the whole, what the game plan is on the table, and you start to figure out where they want to go. Like, I think it's interesting because you might have the conversation and go down the path of saying, look, if we're going for the cream puffs out there, by the way, we're going to be in multiple offer situations. This is probably what it's going to look like. They're the houses that everybody wants. They're the top of the list. Everybody's going to be excited about it. There's going to be people fighting for it. There are ways to find homes that you're probably not going to be in multiple offer situations. And if you don't want to get into that rat race, if you don't want to get into that craziness, I can show you other homes. I can take you down a different path over here. And no matter how low the inventory is in most marketplaces, there are homes that are sitting on the market. They're sitting on the market for whatever reasons, but they're missed the mark. They might be overpriced. They might have something wrong with it. They might have something that needs to be overcome. But as you start to work with your clients, you can help. Instead of them just getting beaten up and frazzled and frustrated over and over again, at least when you know it up front, you can start to pick some different strategies and different directions to go down, which hopefully is going to allow them to feel some success. Because, hey, it's like you can maybe not get into a multiple offer situation, but you're going to buy a house over here that actually needs some remodel done to it. Like it's going to need a fair amount of work. Or you can find a house over here that may have some weird damage on it that the homeowners aren't able to repair before that thing gets sold. Maybe there's a way we can work with them to get that repair work done before it hits the closing table. There's all kinds of fascinating different ways you can navigate through these deals if you give these people some different paths, but you can only do it by asking more questions. At least that's for me. I mean, where do you see it, Matt? What are you thinking?
I think that is a really, really good point in kind of saying, hey, I know this is what you want and why. Let's talk about another scenario that could potentially be. Like right now, if you have new construction in your area, great option for people who don't want to compete, right? You're going to pay more for new construction right now because there's less competition for that if you're at a big track community. I think about where I live. I could go to that office right now and buy a house. No problem. They have them. I'm paying a lot for them. A lot. You know, versus the homes down the street that are being resold that, like, by the time I get my car and go over there, it's already under contract. So I think exploring options has to be part of this conversation. A lot of times agents will go through the funnel process and we explain it as, hey, this is the process of elimination versus selection. They get the criteria, they do the search, and then they're just like, here are your options. And this is where, if you've asked enough questions and understood really the life change or the reason why they want to buy a home and why they want to move into this space, we can say, hey, here's what's available based on our criteria. We're going to go look at this stuff. Let's take a look at it. We're going to go see this. After we go see that, let's check out a few of these other things. I just want to drive by a few things to get your guys' feedback. I think this is an okay market. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of just putting people in the car and driving around, but I think this is the opportunity to say, hey, let's go check out some things because we need to get creative right now in terms of finding inventory because it's there. And this is now getting into like the 10, 5, 3, 1% of opportunities that we can pull from. But if you know of a neighborhood that's saying, okay, what if they really like this neighborhood over here? Maybe we can get creative and send some letters to these owners. They have to understand that if they take a process like that, we're also going to pay for it more so than you would for new construction because now you're making inventory that's not even there. But having that conversation, going through the process will allow you to at least get a better idea of the preparedness of the buyers as well. Because I think that's where it comes down to is step 10, what happens when we find it?
I want to add, though, with what you just said is that you might pay more for that, too. And I want to actually just say that that might not be true. I think there's people out there that want to sell right now that don't want to have a whole herd of people come through the house. Like, they need to sell. They're stuck in that in a situation. And believe me, if you find the right person in the right scenario that's like, oh my gosh, this is our chance. We don't need to have a whole bunch of people come through the house. I don't have to worry about all the showings because they don't even realize how the market's working out there. You totally might find somebody that goes like, yeah, we do need to sell, but I'm waiting for this whole COVID thing to blow over.
And when I say pay more, right, we need to be very clear about overpaying because since that is the biggest fear right now that's out in the market, at least from what I see from buyers, they're like, I'm just not willing to go that high. All of these homes are theoretically trading for market value, right? There's a willing buyer and a willing seller. These houses are closing at numbers. This is why prices are up. Paying too much is a moment in time opinion and it's arbitrary. So when I say like overpaying, I'm talking about like maybe you're paying an extra, you know, 0.5%, maybe a full percent in some scenarios, which in any given day is not overpaying. It's fair market value.
Well, because the minute it closes, you're a comp.
Exactly.
And the minute the neighbor's house closes also because they're like, hey, the house next door just sold for this and they're able to use you for a comp, there's two comps.
And this brings up to a very important point about intrinsic value for your buyers. And this has got to be part of the conversation and understanding what is valuable to your clients as buyers may not be valuable to somebody else and vice versa. And those are conversations that must happen with your folks when you are getting into these scenarios because you get into these multiple offers, all of a sudden we're totally focused on the money. Now, this probably goes without saying, Garrett, but pre-quals, pre-approvals, like that's done. We know the buying power of our buyers before even going down this path today. Otherwise, you're lost, right? So once we understand the buying power, now we can talk about the intrinsic value to them. The importance of having that backyard, being on a cul-de-sac, whatever it is, you know, those things are not just a dollar value. That's, you know, for the next 10 years of your life.
Yeah, it's interesting. The intrinsic value is something I think has looked over tremendously because I know when I bought, you know, the house that we're in right now, one of the things that Sarah and I were initially looking for was a cul-de-sac. And for me, for that cul-de-sac, will I ever buy a house on a cul-de-sac now that my kids are teenagers? Not a huge deal to me anymore. By the way, I'm not on a cul-de-sac because there's other things that made me overlook being on a cul-de-sac. But it was one of the top criteria that I was saying, this is a necessity in the next house that we own. Because in my mind, I had this amazing picture of the kids in this safe cul-de-sac riding their skateboards and their bikes around. I had a vision of a basketball hoop at the end and being able to have, you know, evening basketball games with all the neighbor kids and things like that, with no cars flying through and racing down the street. I had these pictures of T-ball and stuff, you know, being set up in the cul-de-sac. There was a huge amount of value of this picture that I had in my head of where this life was taking me to and where I was going that I was ready to pay for. Way more than what I would pay for it now. Now I want acreage.
Me too. Me too. I want some land, baby.
Put it on a main highway. Just let me be able to walk away from the highway.
Oh, talk about an area of the market that is blowing up in terms of value. Those prices on land right now is, I mean, overall, you could probably still save some money, but I digress.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the intrinsic value that happens there. And we're watching land sell like at an incredible rate right now in a lot of marketplaces, going for extremely high dollars because people are just gathering up there. But there's an intrinsic value set to that right now based on what we all just went through and the lives that people are kind of living right now. So I think that that's a really good point you brought up, Matt, that a lot of people miss out on, that people are like, oh my gosh, they're overpaying for, they totally overpaid for that. You have no idea what that house was worth to them.
No idea. This is where, and I don't want to go down this path right now, but I always talk to people about your personal home. Don't look at it as an investment. You want to be very, very smart with your money. You want to be very smart with your purchase. You want to be smart with your how you're borrowing money and your overall credit, but it is a personal finance decision. It's not necessarily an investment decision because you're not making money with your home. I mean, right now, probably a lot of us are making money with our home if we decide to sell, but I'm not selling my house right now, so I'm not making any money with my house. It's costing me lots of money right now.
You know, what's interesting is I talked with Larry about that years ago. We were having the conversation as we went through when the banks all, you know, failed and everything went sideways. And before that time in Ninja Selling, we talked a lot about your personal residence being an investment. And I remember sitting down with Larry and we were talking about like big changes we need to make through times. And Larry and I do that periodically. We sit down and say, what do we need to adjust? What do we need to look at? What's verbiage we need to maybe be saying differently? And he brought up, he said, you know, one of the things at the group that in Fort Collins, what they've decided is they will not refer to a primary residence as an investment anymore. Because the minute the market shifts, the minute they overimprove, the minute something like that happens, or they bought it for an intrinsic value to them, what happens is they go, I made a bad investment. And they look at the real estate agent and go, they allowed me to make a bad investment. The way you're describing it, Matt, is exactly how you want to approach it with your clients in setting that stage and getting them to understand that this is your personal home. This is, as you said, this is a financial decision that you're making to have a lifestyle, to have whatever it is that you're paying for, whatever the value is that you're seeing and what it's going to mean for you in your life. But taking the investment side out of it, this is another great time that anybody who's listening out there, be careful talking about a primary residence as an investment because it can come back and get you.
Yeah, a financial investment in particular, right? Because I guess we could consider it a life investment, because it's giving you a certain quality of life. But yeah, financial investment, I love when people like close on a home, they're like, congratulations, you're making a great investment. How do you know? Now, if I bought an investment property and it's cash flowing and we did the numbers on it and we're like, hey, this is a good investment, we already know that. Buying a personal home, I mean, yes, you're making a great investment in your life. You're making a great investment in personal finance with all the benefits that come with home ownership, for sure, no doubt. But I wouldn't be guiding my buyers based on, hey, let's go make a great investment for your personal residence. Now, unless, and because I just have to throw the caveats out there, Garrett, you know, unless you have like a young buyer who wants to house hack or, you know, buy their first property and turn it into a rental at some point, then yeah, I mean, then, but you also aren't going to be looking for the cream puffs at that point. You know, there's got to be other personal sacrifices.
It's the house that I'm standing in right now. You know, when we bought this house, I mean, literally there was a point of owning this house that we would have people over and I was like, hey, go out the back deck. By the way, just don't go over there on the deck because I don't want to be sued. Like, you could potentially fall through. You might be fine. You might not. The Trex is barely hanging together. At least the boards underneath were like, just, I mean, I have video of me literally sticking my hand through boards under the deck. there was an investment attitude inside of taking on a massive project that for 7 years, I am still handling massive projects on this house. It's like pick ones apart as you can do it. There are definitely investment opportunities for primary resident type homes. And I totally get it. I'm standing in one right now.
You just can't approach every situation, most situations, most buying situations, even the home you're in right now. There's a lot of intrinsic value that went into that purchase. And there's the component of, hey, we can also have a financial investment component to this purchase.
Yes. So you kind of went down that path of saying like, yeah, but it could. And I want to say, yes, that is possible. But for most people, they are buying a house basically for a lifestyle matter. They're not doing it for typically an investment at the end of the day. Hopefully it works out that way, but that usually should not be the first and primary focus of why you're buying a primary resident.
Exactly. And so bringing it kind of back to this qualifying our buyers part, this is where having this conversation up front is going to be very important, because you'll hear come out of your buyer's mouth, well, is this a good time to buy? Is this really a good time to invest in real estate? Am I being unwise with my money if I buy a home right now? And the answer is it depends, right? You've got to dig deeper. It's like, well, tell me why you think why or why not? And dig deeper into some of these questions versus just starting to talk to them, because a lot of agents will be like, well, yeah, like we have to figure out how to get these people into purchase mode. It's like, no, we need to figure out how to get these people clear so they can make the best decision for them, which might be renting for a year. That could be a potential outcome.
Well, and let's say, go back to like when I was looking at buying a house, then, you know, the question was posed to me saying, are you okay staying in the rental for another couple years as you kind of figure things out and this thing all kind of dies down? And are you okay not having your kids on a cul-de-sac, making friends, building relationships at the age that they're at right now? That would, you know, they're 5 right now. That might put them at 7 or 8. Are you okay missing that time there? Is it worth it for you to move forward? This is just the conversations you have to have and have them go, no, I'm not okay with that. I want them to have that part of growing up. That's the lifestyle I had when I was growing up. So my best memories were, you know, between the ages of 5 to about 10, goofing off with friends on the street. I don't want them to miss out on that. I want to make sure I can give that to them. That allows them to make the decision. But your job is to just ask questions and learn. And that's part of what the 10-step buyer's process does, is allows you to figure out what are the most important things that you're trying to get out of having a house. And when you figure out what those things are, then you can say, how badly do you want it? Are you willing to wait for it, for the perfect situation to show up for these reasons? Or are you willing to maybe step up a little bit to say, hey, it's that important to me right now? There's a lot of people, like, you take it out of, you know, house sales, you go, like, say, buying a car, there's a lot of people that can get by with a lot of vehicles as they're growing up. You know, it's not that big of a deal. But all of a sudden, when you, you know, bring a spouse into the equation, when you bring kids into the equation, and you know that your spouse is going to be driving that car around town, you're like, I want them to be safe. I want to make sure that they're going to have the best chance of coming back home to me. All of a sudden, we're like, I'll spend more for a car. You know, I'll step up to, what is the crash safety ratings on that thing? You know, all of a sudden we step up to these different things that we would have never done before, because all of a sudden there's the value there for it. We will spend more, we will do different things. And that's what we're looking for as we're going through, is like, what are your thresholds? What's important to you right now? How can I help guide you so that you're not sacrificing things and you understand why you're buying and what you're buying? I hope that makes sense.
It does make sense. And car is kind of an interesting example, because, I mean, they're completely irrational purchases. Not the act of buying a car, but the cars that we buy. And I am fully willing to admit that every car that I buy, I rationalize it, but it's completely irrational purchase. Otherwise, we'd all be driving around in minivans.
Well, I mean, prime example is what just happened to me, Matt. It's, you know, I've got my 2 girls that are 16, and we went on the car hunt. And believe me, we were buying cars for different reasons. They had an idea of what they wanted. I had an idea, and my idea was safety. Like, that was me. Safety, 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 safety. And Matt, as I've shared with you, the car was 2 weeks old and a guy ran a light at an intersection and the car was totaled. And, you know, I look at that now, now that I'm having to replace that car, the intrinsic value for me is like, okay, so next car that we're now going to replace it with, am I going to continue to follow my same lines of like safety is absolute top priority? It's 1,000 times higher and greater than it was when I bought the car originally.
Yeah. And here's the thing too, right? As you as a buyer going into a new dealership right now, the likelihood of a salesperson, unless they're really good, asking you about your history with car purchasing, right? You know, because finding that motivation right there would be very, very beneficial to the salesperson in helping getting you in a car that is safe and is one that you're really excited to purchase. Because I would then be like, well, tell me about your history with buying cars, and you go into that, and then all of a sudden, boom, here we go. And this is why the buyer interview is so important. And I want to highlight this too, because I think, you know, agents need to bring some of your own awareness into this. Go back and think about all your buyers, because you're like, well, but, you know, this is, well, we got to get going. How many of the buyers that you're out there working with that are the hot buyers where, oh, well, no, we got to go, otherwise we're going to miss out, end up missing out over and over and over, and then don't buy anything. And now you spent all your time with them, but you rationalized it up front saying, well, I have to go because of this. So you need to fight your own thinking sometimes in getting this buyer process into gear to make sure that you're asking these questions and learning about these people so you can guide them in a wonderful, wonderful way. I hope that makes sense, Garrett.
No, I think, again, this is what we're watching right now. This is that moving so fast, so quick because of the market. And again, using that car analogy, it's like I could easily have a salesperson talk to me here in a week and just going like, yep, let's go find your car. Where the reality is that they just sat down for a second and said, okay, what is this guy's hot buttons? Oh, safety is. Ha! All right. Let me start off with the cars that are going to provide the safest packaging to put your children in. Let's go that way first, because you probably have my attention and you probably make me, I will probably step up to levels I wasn't planning on stepping up to continue to keep my children safe. This is, again, going back into this is like, even though there's a low amount of inventory out there, it allows you, just as you were saying, Matt, earlier, is like to reach out to a neighborhood of specific homes or specific addresses that fit a need for somebody. I mean, you could take all the cul-de-sacs in specific neighborhoods and be like, you want me to mail to that cul-de-sac? Okay, great. Got it. How about this cul-de-sac? Any house on that cul-de-sac would probably work also. Great. And really fine tune. By the way, your buyers will think you are amazing for taking the time to listen to them and go outside the box and to figure out some new platform that they're like, well, how would you do this any other way? There is no other way. I have to do it this way to go and engage these people. And hopefully we're going to find somebody there that's like, yeah, we are thinking about selling, but now you're customized.
Even if it doesn't work, they're going to love it. Most of the time it won't.
You're right. There's a lot of times that that's not going to work. But here's the other thing. So taking this to a kind of a different direction here, in a marketplace where most agents would do anything to create inventory, like if we can create inventory right now, anybody who's listening to this, you will dominate your business plan. You will dominate the goals that you want to set for yourself if you can get good at creating inventory. Working with this buyer, going and actually making connections with homeowners in your area and reaching out to specific, and I'm just going to continue to use cul-de-sacs for an example, you are now meeting potential people, even that the house may not work, they may not want to sell right now. That's an opportunity to build a relationship with a homeowner, to connect with somebody and maybe have a nice conversation with them. And they may say, we're not looking at selling right now, but that's now somebody you have a relationship and a connection with, and they might want to sell down the road. And I guarantee you, there's not a realtor staying in touch with them, and you can start being that person and connecting with them. There's lots of elements here that are going to build your overall business, as well as creating a customized situation for this buyer that maybe either tired of getting beaten up, not finding the houses that they want. Maybe they worked with another realtor before and they just got beaten up and just took time off and like, I don't want to do this right now. Or somebody that you can save from having to go through that process.
Yeah. And
hopefully,
I think to also elevate the what can this do for your business, particularly with buyers, the buyer interview and asking all these questions up front is going to help protect you about getting that text like, oh, we went to this open house. You know, it's going to keep your buyers loyal to you for one, because they're going to love you for being in control of a process for them. And it's going to lead to more and better referrals from those buyers to buyers who know you have a process and now want to work with you because of it. And so if anything can motivate you to sit down, have these conversations, ask lots of questions, I mean, let it be that. Your business will be better for it on the back end, not to mention that these buyer clients will have a much more enjoyable experience.
Yeah, people love to know that you have a process. And that's with real estate, that's with anything. If you look at any business that you like going to, any restaurant you like going to, a lot of it is because there is a process of how they take care of you, how they move you through what your experience you're going to have with them is. It is very planned out. It's not, you know, wishy-washy. It's not sometimes somebody gets this, sometimes somebody gets that. Anytime there's a process, that's something that somebody can refer to, they can tell their friends about and be like, you're going to love what they do or how they handle you. Or, you know, everybody's been to a certain restaurant where you're like, you're going to love how they bring the food out to you, you know, how they present it, how they, you know, I can't ask any questions here. But Matt, have you ever been to a restaurant where the chef comes out and explains to you what he's prepared?
Yeah, those are some of my favorite kinds of restaurants.
Yeah, I mean, I can still remember back to a date night that my wife went on in Cannon Beach at a place called the Stephanie Inn, where literally it was one of the best experiences ever, that I have recommended this hotel, this restaurant over and over and over again. And the number one thing that I recommend was the chef coming out and explaining to us why he prepared the meal and what it was all about. This was like 20 years ago. Like, it's a long time ago, before Sarah and I were married. Like, those are the experiences that make people want to refer, that makes people want to tell other people about what they experienced using this certain service. That's what we're able to do when we have a process like the 10-step buyer's process. We're not just throwing them a car and taking them out. I want your clients to say, I wish my other realtor would have done this. I wish they would have given this much time and attention up front. I wish they would have listened to what was really important to us rather than just going out and looking for a house. It will happen. I promise you.
Oh, yeah. You follow this process, that is going to happen for sure. So, man, there's so much great stuff in this process. Guys, just go and review that if you haven't. Go back to it. I don't know why you lost it in the first place.
I love that, Matt, when you're like, where did it go? Like, what do you mean go back to it? Like, what happened?
Like, it's like, I mean, I hate it when I see people post like lost pet, lost dog, and all those things. It's like, I feel like that's like a poster, lost buyer process. Please help me find it. It looks like this.
We should create a little poster.
And you know what? If you're not following a buyer process, you may be making those posters for your buyers. Lost buyer. I don't know where they went. They won't call me back.
Oh, that was nice. So, nice way to wrap that one up, Matt.
Yeah. And I'll give a little preview of what's going to be an upcoming episode here, which is your customer service calls, because that's how you keep these people on track once you get into the process. And we're going to dive into that very soon for y'all. So just want to say to everybody that we really appreciate you guys tuning in. And if it's okay, Garrett, I would like to just make a small request of all of our listeners. We appreciate y'all so much. And if you wouldn't mind just hopping in there into the review section and giving us a review. Give us as many stars as you like. Hopefully it's a 5-star review, but just drop a review in there. It helps us get seen by more and more folks. We're really trying to expand this movement and introduce Ninja and these conversations to more and more people to help better the real estate industry. You guys know that your businesses, those of you who run a Ninja-based business, you feel good about it. And so if you wouldn't mind, please sharing it up, that would be wonderful. And if there's anything we can do for you, if you're interested in what we do, just head over to ninjacoaching.com, click on all the buttons there, go explore and reach out to us. And we're happy to help in any way that we possibly can. So thank you guys so much. Super grateful for you. Garrett, thank you so much for bringing this topic today. What a good one. Very, very timely. And hope that you all have a great day.
Thank you so much, everybody. If you enjoyed today's episode and would like more, visit us at theninjasellingpodcast.com.
There you will also find links for more information about Ninja Selling and coaching. Have an incredible day.